Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. And happy hump day Wednesday. Well, it's been an afternoon of breaking news, and we've got a great guest joining us to talk about some of that breaking news. We're joined this half hour by State Senator Chris Larson of the Senate Fighting District 7. Welcome, Senator Larson. A bit of a kerfuffle over the last hour or so about whether or not Governor Evers is running for re-election. Some sources saying he's going to announce that he's not running for a third term, and his spokesperson then responding on X within the last, I don't know, handful of minutes that, that's not an actual thing. Your reactions to all the hubbub, sir?
Yeah, I people have been talking about this for quite a while, but I guess we'll find out whenever they make an announcement. For our part, I would hope that Tony Evers does read the room and is ready to pass the baton to the next generation to be able to make sure that we actually have people who are ready to fight for our state.
So let's talk about that, Senator. You were harshly critical of the governor's budget. Tell us about some of those reasons why you were critical of the governor's budget, which, again, not really the governor's budget when we're playing on a Republican playing field.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a different legislature than we had before. We're within two seats in the Senate. We're within five seats in the House. And so for us, you also have a Democratic governor. And so you would hope that, especially when it became clear that they needed to have Democratic votes to be able to pass this, that the first Democratic vote was going to have quite a price tag associated with it about what it would get that first Democratic vote versus the last Republican vote. You think of the distance between where Republicans are at nationally and where Democrats are at nationally and how absolutely bonkers the Republicans are of rescinding money for National Public Radio, of sending an armed masked battalion out into cities where there's peaceful protesters and where they want to pull away health care away from people who rightfully deserve it. So the first Democratic vote should have a heavy price tag associated with it. That should have included Medicaid expansion, especially when you have a Democratic governor who could stand there and say, we are not going to do something unless it benefits the people. You could have had matching special education reimbursement to make sure that they're getting 90% reimbursement the same way private vouchers are getting them and have been getting it for years. They were not signing the budget unless that's in there. Criminal justice reform is a huge one. Making sure that our child care centers are going to be taken care of so that parents can actually continue to work and that we don't have one quarter of the child care centers shutting down as is being predicted. Any one of those things. Or more, right? Should have been a red line in this budget. Instead, we catered to Republicans and what their red lines were, and none of those things were ever even on the table. Tony Evers made very clear to the Democrats that he would sign whatever budget was put in front of him. If it was good or if it was bad, he wanted to get a budget done. That's what he did the last budget. That's what he did the budget before that. That's what he did the budget before that. And you know what? Maybe in different times, in normal times, that would have been fine. But right now, the working people of the state of Wisconsin are under siege, and we need to have a fighter. I just wish the governor would have done that. So
let me just hop in and ask very briefly. Let me just ask very briefly. Doesn't some of the criticism rely on the assumption that Republicans would blink? They don't have to blink. Was there an analysis for you of downside risk in the interim period? Are those things reasonably all actually achievable when you have a legislature that is correctly, as you point out, by much smaller margins, still controlled by Republicans?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it benefits us to give up in advance by not trying, right? I think we're rewarding their intransigence by saying that they are refusing, And we have used cynicism as an excuse to be able to say, well, they would never go for this. Well, why? why are we not talking about expanding Badger Care, expanding Medicaid to 133% of poverty? Because it would get 90% match from the federal government. It would net us $750 million.
And Senator, I won't disagree with you with any of those points, and I don't think the governor would either. But the question is that actually possible given a Republican-controlled legislature? And right. If we're going to criticize the budget, how do we then unify to beat Republicans, the candidates coming out for the governor's race from the Republican side, and actually take control of the legislature in 26, right? Like, what is actually possible? Because I don't think I've heard Tony Evers say he doesn't want any of those things that you just articulated.
Well, I mean, he put them in his budget, and then that was it. I don't think he made the stump around the state saying that this is what we absolutely need to have and making the case, which, by the way, these are wildly popular things. And this isn't just a blue state or a red state or a purple state. This has happened in states across the country. All but 10 states have expanded Medicaid because it's the right thing to do.
And of course it is. But again, my question is about the political realities of the budget itself and the time pressures and what happens with no budget when the big brutal bill gets passed and adopted. What happens when some of those funding sources runs out? How long can we withstand no budget or a veto or a standoff with no budget? And who ends up paying the price in the interim? Do you think Republicans blink if we get into, frankly, a game of chicken with them over the budget?
Well, we blinked. I mean, we blinked immediately. So,
argument. I mean, the other argument is you get the best deal you can when you don't control the legislature. And I think the question that you're pointing correctly to, Senator, is what was actually in the realm of possibility? What was achievable given the voting margins, right? And again, I agree with absolutely everything you're saying on the substantive merits of all of these issues.
Yeah, and I would say, look, the budget started when he ended up introducing it back in February. And so you had February to talk about it. You had March to talk about it, April, May. And it was only in June that we actually got to the point where there was any discussion about whether Democrats' votes would be required. And we knew from the beginning that they were going to need Democratic votes. But it was only the last week that they finally brought Democrats into the room. And they basically said, look, these are the things that are off the table. And then that timeline, right, then the clock is ticking. And you have the theatrics of, like, the ticking clock trying to get things
the
done
urgency.
Before the end of the Yeah.
Let me ask you a question let me ask you a question about the necessity of Democratic votes. Had Republicans remained completely unified, they wouldn't have needed Democratic votes. Moreover, haven't Republicans in the last few years, maybe I'll say a decade within the state and certainly under the MAGA regime and the craziness of Trump, been an incredibly unified party? So until Voss and other Republican leaders couldn't make the votes tally, it wasn't certain that they were going to need Democratic votes to pass the budget, was it?
No, it was clear on the Republican side and the Senate for sure. You're right, on the Assembly side, Robin Voss has some type of trance that he has also been Republicans
the Pied Piper.
What the heck is going on there? But he literally was accounting for their votes through fear and intimidation. In the Senate, that was not the case. Right, you had a number of folks who said up front, Chris Capanga and Steve Nass, who were able to say that we are not going to be voting for this. You knew that they were going to need votes, and the margin was so close. And so we knew that way, way, way in advance. And frankly, that wasn't just me talking about it. It was a lot of Democrats talking about it. And it was only at the very end that they finally realized, okay, we need to bring you into the room. And Maggie, that was because the Republicans were counting on Tony Evers turning Democratic votes over. And luckily, our leader, Dianne Heselbein, said we are not going to be offering up any votes unless we're in the room negotiating. And again, those conversations, unfortunately, didn't start until a week before the budget passed. And I think, like, there was a huge mistake. If we would have had a governor who was willing to work with us in partnership,
and be able to say, let's get the best deal that we can for the people in the state of Wisconsin, then it would have been a very different conversation about how we get to these things that are frankly wildly popular. Everything that I said is wildly popular publicly. And instead, we're rewarding Republicans for their cynicism and their inability to actually care and govern and do things that are actually helping the people. And
yeah, this has been a persistent problem. Granted, with the new maps, the margins reduce. My question to you, Senator, is if Tony Evers runs again, does the criticism help or hurt the chances of Democrats to hold the state house in the next election cycle? How do we work through the differences within our party and legitimately talk about some of those shortcomings and still maintain a united front when it comes to defeating the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, we'll take a step back. And I think it's important to talk about what Democratic rule would actually look like, what our priorities are. And I think we could have been laying those things out. You know, the governor put out his budget, and there's a lot of things in there which gives us something to rally around. But I think if we're going to be making the case of the public, people are talking about us getting a trifecta like it's a given, like it's an automatic.
Right.
There's stuff happening now.
Far from it,
right now, the Justice Department is talking about trying to be able to get the voter rolls for the state of Wisconsin and other states. Let's not forget that this is not just some normal president. This is a guy who denied the election results of the 2020 election and sent a violent mob onto the Capitol to try and overturn the results of it. He only embraces the results when they go his way. He is not somebody who is for free and fair elections. So we have to really make the case to the public about that. But then beyond that, we need to say how we're going to make people's lives better and show that we're actually fighting for them. And that starts.
Sorry, Senator. I want to just jump in here because no one, I certainly have no disagreement about all of the havoc and threat that MAGA and Donald Trump pose. All those things are true. And yet, I think the question is, how do we engage in real policy debate within the Democratic Party, specifically the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and yet not weaken the party, not weaken candidates? Can you stick around and come back on the other side? Because I'd love to continue this discussion.
Yeah, happy to.
Awesome. Yeah, We've got Senator Chris Larson of Fighting Senate District 7 with us. We're talking about the hard stuff of politics. When we agree about the most important stuff, but have some disagreement about how to get to the political wins, what do we do about that? We continue our discussion with the senator on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.